Academy. Basketball fans, welcome to another edition of the Golden Break. I'm your host, Adam Woke. We are joined today by Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Sentinel Journal to try to get his perspective over what's been kind of going on over these last couple weeks. It's been a little bit of a tough ride over the last four, five, six games. And I think this is a good time to bring Ben on and pick his brain. A shout out to the production team, Matt Mikus, Dr. Michael Keegan, Jeff Cibollina. And do not forget, we are less than a week away from the live Golden Break pod at Uncle Buck's with Travis Diener, National Marquette Day, Marquette Butler. We go on right after the game. Can't wait. What a cool opportunity. Before we kick it over to Ben, I want to talk really quick about the news that came out about the NIL this week. The NCAA has decided that they are going to take a look at NIL practices over the last year or so because they have concern that it's being leveraged to pull players to certain schools. This is absolutely ridiculous to me. The NCAA, who has notoriously done a horrendous job of policing any sort of financial malpractice, is now going to come out and publicly state that they have concerns about the NIL. Finally, players try to get their hands on some cash, and the NCAA is now, we got to look into this. There's some teams that might be leveraging this the wrong way. There might be some people taking advantage of this. Of course they are. The NCAA doesn't enforce anything. And now when players finally start to line their pockets just a little bit, the NCAA is going to be the moral authority. They're going to get on their high horse and decide to investigate. Absolutely ridiculous that the NCAA is going to come out and do this. I think, you know, at the end of the day, the NIL is not even really that good of a deal. I don't think it's bad that the NIL exists for college players. But you talk about giving the smallest slice of the pie, and it's not even really a slice of the pie if you think about it at the end of the day, because these players have to go out and, or colleges are helping them, go out and land a deal. So really, like, they're going to, like, take Justin Lewis, for example, right? Like, he is currently working with Uncle Bucks. Well, he's doing stuff for them. He's not getting paid for the job he's doing on the court. He is doing additional work off the court to make money off of his success, while teams in the NCAA continue to profit off the game itself while players don't. The reality is, to me, is that I think players need to be paid with the gobs of money that teams in the NCAA are pulling in. They 100% deserve the slice of the pie. And I cannot get behind the argument where people say, well, you know, they're getting a free education. It's a big deal. First of all, college education is so insanely overpriced. So this idea that they're getting a six-figure value in a degree, well, the only reason it costs six figures is because the college financial system is a hot mess. I mean, in-state tuition for kids in a lot of states, like in a place like Illinois, is an assload of money. A college degree is not a fair compensation when you look at the amount of money teams are making. NIL almost feels like a sort of pat on the head. Like, oh, here, you can do this. Go ahead. Go make some more money over there. Leave the adults alone. Leave us be. I think it needs to change, and I think the NCAA is full of crap with this story that they came out this week. But hey, what the hell do I know? All right, let's get over to Ben. We are joined by a good friend of the pod, Ben Steele. Ben, how you doing, man?
Good. I'm just trying to add to my world record of appearances on this podcast. Just trying to put some distance in between me and Diener, make sure he never catches me.
Well, hey, listen, I may have to give Diener some bonus points for being at the live show next weekend for National Marquette Days. So, but again, maybe you'll make it, maybe you won't. Maybe we'll see you there. Listen, man, the last time we talked, you were in the snow globe of Providence. We were going into that game with quite the win streak. And since that Providence game, we've had a lot of ups and downs, including some really tough stretch of games. What do you think is attributed to some of the obstacles this team has faced?
It's a lot of different things. The biggest ones against Providence and UConn were the offensive rebounding issues, allowing offensive rebounds. I think we talked about that at least in a couple of appearances. That's been obviously a season long issue for Marquette. The Butler game, that was just, I think, a total defensive letdown. And, you know, they were coming off that streak of playing all those tough, that 7-game stretch, that as tough as any college basketball schedule in the nation. And, you know, Marquette was really good in that stretch, much better than anyone could have anticipated. And I think a lot of that is this team, like, really thrives on being an underdog, right? That's Shaka Smart's whole thing, like coaching with a chip on his shoulder. Nobody believes in us card. But then you go into the Butler game where they're expected to win. I know it's on the road, but, you know, it's a team that's struggled offensively all year. I think they're going into that game, they were last in the Big East in offensive efficiency. But then at the start of the game, it was just the defense was just wasn't connected at all. The press wasn't working. It didn't cause any issues. Butler was just pinging the ball around. They got easy shots. Saw the ball go in a couple times, and they got the confidence rolling, the crowd, road crowd into it. And then it just kind of snowballed on them, and they're down 20 after the first 10 minutes. And then I think they let that affect them on the offensive end too. Offense kind of stagnated a lot in that game. Marquette's at its best when it's sharing the ball, when they're pushing around the 20 assist mark. And that game, they kind of descended into like one-on-one a little bit, a lot of ISO ball in that one. I think they only had 8 assists in that game. And that's a trap they've fallen into a little bit this year. Like, if you look at a lot of their losses, a lot of them are like single digit assist games, like the Butler one was. They're definitely at their best when they're sharing the ball. So, you know, it's a lot of different things have contributed to those losses.
Do you think those offensive issues are stemming from the way teams are defending us? Or do you think that there are some internal mechanisms that aren't working for us?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, you know, a lot of the early season success was on the pick and roll with, you know, Tyler, and he'd get like two guys on the ball, and then like he'd hit the open guy, and then the ball would be in rotation, like the ball would swing around a lot. And now teams are kind of not doing that anymore. They're either forcing Tyler to shoot the ball, which he actually did pretty well in the Butler game. So I think it's a lot of that. The teams are taking away the ball getting in rotation, and they're going to have to figure that out. Yeah. I think that's probably the biggest issue in regard to that.
To me, here's what I think the biggest issue is, because I definitely think there's a difference between the way some of the teams are defending us. Mm-hmm. But something you also talked about defensively as well is, especially in the Butler game, that huge letdown. But I think between UConn, Georgetown, and Butler, a common thread for me, even though we won against Georgetown, but still a common thread that I really felt like I saw was we are not playing with the violence, mm-hmm. with the energy that we normally do. And I do not think it has anything to do with these kids not caring, but I'm wondering about their legs. I think there's a fatigue issue with this team. You said it, man. Like, with that 7-game stretch is probably one of the hardest in college basketball. And the way I watched that Marquette team close out against Villanova shooters at the arc was like the opposite of what I've seen from the energy of the closeouts. Yeah. Any issues that you have or you think about fatigue, and is there any conversation around the team about these guys' legs?
Nobody's really talked about that at all. No one's mentioned that. I mean, they play 10 guys, so I mean, you can't get much deeper than that. Absolutely. The style is physically taxing, getting up and down, playing with that violence that Shaka Smart likes to play with, that he likes to talk about.
Well, and up the court too, right? Like, you're up the court playing the whole game too.
Yeah. You're up and down. It can definitely be tiring, but you know, they knew the number of games that they were going to play. So I don't see that changing. I mean, they got one little brief break next week. There's only one game next week, the National Marquette game against Butler. So we'll see if that little brief break, if that can refresh them a little bit. We'll see. I mean, coming up on March, man, you got to be at your best now.
Providence game. I refuse to believe that Shaka in the timeout drew up an ISO play for Tyler.
Yeah.
For that last shot. Do you have any intel on that? Do you know a little bit about what kind of happened there? I mean, was that the play?
I know they wanted to get him going toward the basket and then, you know, just see what would happen if they collapsed on him. He would hit somebody. I think it was Horkler, if I remember correctly. He kind of cut off the corner, so he couldn't kind of force them into that baseline. And then I think they kind of panicked. He kind of panicked a little bit, and the clock was running down. He forced up that tough little mid-range jumper. Justin Lewis obviously had the good look on the putback, but I think that was a play just for Tyler to create something.
I wish there was a screen, like, at least, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't know that one thing with Tyler is like, he's just not someone that's going to take someone off the ball. You know, we actually, I think that's always been one of our issues with this team. We don't have that sort of like dude that, I mean, Cam's got his moments.
And yeah.
Even Darryl. Yeah. Right. Like, man, to not set a screen there. That seems like a mistake.
Yeah. Daryl's not like a burner either. He's more of like a put your head guy and plays the bully ball a little bit. Yeah. Tyler definitely doesn't beat you off the bounce that much. I don't know if somebody missed the screen. I don't know. I mean, coaching staff's not going to throw anybody under the bus after the game. So I can't say for sure one way or the other.
What did you see in what happened with Kerr in the Butler game? He logged 13 minutes. He didn't play at all down the stretch, and he looked bad in that first half. Injury, energy, just bad night.
Yeah, I think it was just a bad night, and Butler kind of stretched him out a little bit. You know, he's not really good out on the perimeter. You know, he's obviously really good around the basket as a shot blocker. And I think it kind of took him out of his game a little bit. And yeah, I think he only played 13 minutes in that one. I don't even think he had a rebound. He was scoreless, but I don't think he had a rebound at all. But yeah, I think it was just a bad game.
This is really kind of out of left field. This isn't a flow of the roast questions, but I had to ask. I put it in there. I was like, I don't even know where I'm going to put this question, but I have to ask it. Is Georgetown, this year's version of Georgetown, the worst Big East team you've seen in your time?
Yeah, probably. I mean, there were some bad DePaul teams, but they got some decent players. Like Aminu Bahamut was a top recruit. They got some good length with their big guys. Caden Rice, like, is a good shooter. I don't know, man. It just doesn't seem to fit. So it's just not working there for some reason.
You see Ewing keeping his job?
I think what everyone around Georgetown is probably hoping is that he sees it's not working and he steps down himself, because, you know, firing Patrick Ewing, man, that's going to be a tough job for a university president. You got to pull that guy into your office and fire him, man. You know, the greatest player in program history. That's just tough, man. That's why hiring those legends, man, it can be a little dicey.
Back to Marquette. Sorry for that aside. You know me, but I sometimes go all over the place. You know, you talked about, you know, Shaka really trying to keep that underdog, you know, give him that edge, right? It's kind of just giving guys an edge. Over a tough streak of games where you lose 3 out of 4, what are you hearing and seeing and what Shaka is doing to kind of keep morale up, right, and to keep the edge?
Yeah, I mean, he's a really good motivational guy. He thinks deeply about that stuff. I think that's like, he's got different ways to motivate each guy. I think that's one of his good strengths, is he knows how to reach each player individually. You can yell at one guy, or one guy needs like more softer tone. I think he's got a good feel for that. And then just letting guys play their game, you know, like with yesterday, or when was the game? 2 days ago. I'm losing track of games here. Against Georgetown, you know, when Cam Jones comes in and he's just firing away, and he takes, you know, he makes those 3 or 4 in a row in the first half, and then he takes that heat check, like 30 footer, comes out of the game, and he, you know, Shaka knows that that's kind of the way Cam Jones plays. So he's not gonna yell at him for taking some crazy shot. He knows that's part of the deal with him. So he lets those guys play their game and doesn't try to restrict them in any way. I think that's a big part of getting guys to play, motivated to play.
Last week, I think it was, I'm losing track of time as well, my friend. There was a tweet out that kind of showed Greg Elliott's effectiveness for this team offensively. Yeah. I think you probably saw it too. Do you think these rotations as we see them today, do you think they're pretty solid going through the Big East tourney and the dance? Or do you think there's still some tinkering we might see? I'm not advocating that Elliott starts over an Omax or anything like that, but I'm kind of curious on what you think about rotations coming into the most important part of the season in 2-3 weeks.
Yeah, I think that the starting lineup at least is pretty much set in stone. I don't think that's going to change. And I think like what I've been really impressed with Shaka this year is he's really got a good feel for like when to play a guy more, when somebody's got the hot hand. He's not afraid to, even like with the starters, if they're not playing well, to keep them on the bench during crunch time in the second half. I think that's happened a couple of times with like Daryl's been out of the game. You'd expect him to be a guy that would be in there all the time, but if he's not playing well, Shaka's not afraid to put him on the bench for long stretches. So we get into the postseason, a lot of that stuff is like matchup based, right? I don't know if I can give you like a minutes prediction for anybody, you know, a lot of that is based on who you're playing. But I think Shaka's got a good feel for the rotations. I don't really see a lot of issues there. Do you see some, like, what do you think?
Nah, you know, I think that he should keep them as is. Like, I think the problem, and I was talking a little bit about this before, like, Elliott's rebounding numbers are really bad. Yeah. And at the very least with Omax, like, I'm not saying he's the world's greatest rebounder, but he averages, I think, 2 to 3 more rebounds a game than Elliott. And what he does in the press and what he does energy-wise with his length, like, I just don't know that we can afford to sacrifice it. Because I obviously see Elliott as a positive gain on the offensive side. Yeah. But, you know, I think he does I'm with you. I think he does generally a good job of getting and pulling the right trigger at the right time of getting guys in. But to that extent, I think we need to talk about the second half of the Georgetown game, because there was a lot of concern out there about sort of the 4 to 5 minute stretch when you had Jopp, Mitchell, and Ellis out there, right? Cam, Jopp, and Stevie. For a good 4 or 5 minute mark, that brought the game down almost to single digits.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people concerned with that. Did you think that was the right call, the way he decided to deploy those guys?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it wasn't the right call if it spiraled on you that badly. I just think, man, I think it was a lot of human nature in that one. They were just up big and against a winless team, and they just let the foot off the gas, man. I think it just happens. And playing all those young guys together, not a lot of defense in that unit. So I think that was probably the biggest issue there. I'm sure if he had to do it over again, he would switch that up or play it at least a little later in the game when the game's more in hand with 2 or 3 or 4 minutes left. Maybe not the midway point of the second half. That was probably the biggest issue. It was probably a little too early for that. I don't know. It was a little weird. But I think a lot of that is just human nature and, you know.
Well, let me ask you this, because this was, excuse me, sorry. Human nature, right? You talked about foot off the gas. I get the feeling as a player, right? You're up big. I can see naturally human nature, right? Your energy going down. But there also seemed to be some strategy in slowing the game down as well from Shaka's end. Do you think I'm seeing that, right? Because I feel like there have been times where we've been up big in the second half and we don't push the ball up the court like we normally do, but we kind of let and I get it, right? Like if you stretch possessions out with a big lead, if you limit the number of possessions with a big lead for the rest of the game, right? You're going to secure the game. But for this team, I feel like it's so dangerous when they left their foot off the gas because they have a hard time of pressing it again when they do.
Yeah. I think a lot of that was that there wasn't a lot of, besides Cam, there wasn't a lot of shot creation in that lineup, right? Like, and they were probably guarding Cam a little bit closer because of that first half, and they're paying a lot of attention to him. And, you know, you got like Stevie and Oso, those guys aren't going to create for themselves. And that's probably led to a lot of tentativeness on the offensive end. If that makes sense, that probably stretched out the possessions a little longer. I don't know. That's the theory I'm working on with that.
Well, and it's interesting you talk about shot creation, because I think even in some of those games that we've lost, there was way more ISO hero ball I've seen out of this team ever before. Like the action kind of just started to decrease. And I thought, okay, well, I want to go look at usage rates for like really Justin. I wanted to see, you know, between him and Marcel, like, has there been a big change in usage rates? There really hasn't, like, over that five game stretch in comparison to everyone else. But there seems like there's more ISO ball. Do you think that's like a Justin, like the ISO ball is just coming off of like a frustration of not being able to get your stuff? Because it's just not a look for this team that I've grown accustomed to.
Yeah, I think with Justin, if he's got a good matchup, like, I think he's got the freedom to back a guy down. And he's done that to a lot of success this year. So that's probably the right call to have him do that in those situations. I think especially in the Butler game, Daryl kind of settled into some tough shots. I think he forced a lot of like mid-range stuff and didn't get a lot going to the basket. His bully ball game wasn't working in that game. That's probably the biggest issues I've seen along those lines.
Can I ask you about practice? And I don't know how much access or how much you get to see or know about practice. Have you seen practice schedules change? Do you see that maybe they're spending less time in practice at this point of the season, maybe more in film? They need to save their legs. Do they make adjustments as the year goes on when you get to this point?
I'm sure they do. I'm not around. I'm not in practices much during the season. Typically that's, you know, pretty verboten when you're college covering college basketball. They get one day off a week for sure. That's mandated by the NCAA. I think they do have like film heavy days, but you know, I think I think the coaching staff probably has to have a feel for whether guys are tired or not and how they make those decisions.
Yeah, well, and it's hard.
I can't say anything specifically. I don't know specifically.
No, and I get that, right? Like, it's also hard. Like, you know, a coach isn't going to come out and be like, you know, our dudes were gassed. You know, they don't want to ever come off as excuse makers.
Yeah.
But like, I've been in enough locker rooms where like we say behind closed doors, like, listen, we got to like adjust practice time. Like, we've got to cut back like these kids. And it sometimes it's like you said too, like earlier, like, you know, everyone is playing the same amount of games, but there are certain stretches and everyone's body is different. We're just, there are times where you get a little fatigued. I do think they have a feel for these guys. And I really do. And I think that's been one of Shaka's best traits, which I think has made it interesting to see his name in so many coach of the year things. I think just today I started to see he's in there as a finalist. Do you think he's got a shot? He's got a shot at it.
I mean, he's got tough competition in his own conference. You know, Ed Cooley's up there. I mean, it's probably between those two as for Big East coach of the year, and Ed Cooley would be in the conversation for national coach of the year as well with what he's doing at Providence. I don't foresee him winning, Shaka winning the national coach of the year. There's too many other narratives like Kelvin Sampson out at Houston. He's overcome a lot of injuries there. They weren't expected to be this good with those key guys out. I'm trying to think of some other guys on that list. Greg Garda, Wisconsin's probably up there. Who else was on that list?
I saw Cooley on there. That was the one guy that actually really stood out to me. And I can definitely see that. I mean, not only of him just being such a fantastic advocate of the game. And I think he does such a great job of like really thinking about the growth of the person, which Shaka does too.
Yeah, but
he's done some spectacular things with that team this year. And And I wouldn't call them the most talented.
No,
but they're really laden with. Yeah, they're tough. They're strong. They're big, and they're experienced. And I think he's found a good way to figure that out with the team. Speaking of experience, you know, it's got to be hard for guys like Ellis and Keon, you know, to just. And I'm going to throw Joplin in there because he hasn't been getting the minutes anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think really because of the stuff on the defensive side that he really struggles with. What are you getting about these guys? Like, I know last time you talked about Keon's jumping out of the gym. And, you know, I heard Nevada last night talking with Homer about how he's jumping through the gym. Yeah. You know, what do you think about those guys? Like just emotionally, right? You get into after being the king of the world as a senior in high school, and now you're buried on the bench. Like, what are you getting a feel for those guys?
Yeah, it's tough, man. I know the coaching staff's pumping up those guys just because I know that it's good. Yeah, it's like you said, it's got to be hard for them mentally just to be sitting on the bench. Keon's redshirting; it's a different situation for him than Amarion. Marion being the 11th guy, he only gets occasional minutes here and there. But everyone on that coach's staff, they'll tell you, man, Marion's like, he's got his upside is crazy just with his athleticism and the way his body is and the way he can attack defenses. So, I mean, that they're not shy about pumping him up, but with Shaka, as you know, you mentioned with Joplin, like you gotta play defense if you're gonna get minutes. It's the only way that you're gonna get on the floor. So it's gonna be interesting, like over the next couple of years, because you know they got guards coming in too next year. They got two guards coming in for sure. We'll see whether you know if Greg comes back for another year. He's gonna get some healthy amount of playing time, and it's gonna be interesting. Just there's going to be a numbers crunch somewhere in the next couple of years, and we'll see how that all shakes out. I'm not going to offer like a prediction. I'm not really sure. I don't think anybody else can really say anything, but it's going to be interesting for sure.
Well, especially with the transfer portal, that just sort of like throws the whole deck of cards up in the air. You know what I mean? And so let's talk a little bit about recruiting. Tell me what you feel about Ben Gold. I heard Jaquan Roberts was in the house.
Yeah.
And my last thing that I want to ask about recruiting, I've been thinking, like, I'm very interested in what big we bring in next year. I like Oso. Don't get me wrong, but there's just going to be some limitations with him. And the rebounding is an issue to me because of personnel, just because those guys aren't big enough and strong enough. And maybe we can bulk up Oso, but I also want to know like any rumblings about any bigs as well. Cause Ben Gold, I mean, he looks great, but I mean, he's like,
he's probably a shooter.
Yeah, and he's thin. He's got like Chet Holmgren beef to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's not going to be the answer to the rebounding issues. Yeah. He's a New Zealand guy. Good shooter. I think he's going to be like a good pick and pop action guy. He'll be good. Like played on the weak side on like a Tyler pick and roll where he can hit him on the other side and be that good shooter to make it hard on defenses, you know. It's hard to judge. Like I've only seen him on video, so it's kind of hard to judge like the competition and everything over there. And he's playing at NBA Global Academy in Australia, which I mean they played pretty good teams, but the videos I saw wasn't exactly against the best competition. But he looks like the shot's going to be translatable to the college level. He looks like he gets a. His form is good and he's 6'10", so that's a good weapon to have. About the big guy, I'm not sure. Maybe they're waiting to see who's going to be available in the transfer portal.
Because there's no names I've heard of a big guard heavy.
Yeah, and even if you get a high school guy, he's not going to be physically – he's not going to help those offensive rebounding issues. He's not going to be like physically capable to bang with like the biggies teams that Marquette plays against. So it could be a transfer guy. But they are right with Ben Gold adding him, like they're right at the scholarship limit. So if something's going to have to give if they're going to add a transfer, whether that's Greg, you know, opting to go somewhere else for his, or, you know, choosing to be professional after, you know, he's been here 5 years. So he could be ready to move on. That would open up a scholarship. Justin Lewis, we'll see what, if he wants to chase a pro career. We talked about that last time. This can be a decision he's going to have to make. That would open up a spot. So if they're going to add a big guy, like, they're going to, something's going to have to change. And Kian, you know, I don't know if he's going to be ready after his redshirt year, but I mean, he's got, like you mentioned, like, he's got the physical upside. The basketball part, I don't know if I haven't seen him play since fall, or, you know, probably October or November. So I don't know. I'm sure he's gotten a lot better, but I don't know if he's quite ready yet for Big East play.
Well, it's going to be an interesting year in the transfer portal, regardless of how those chips fall.
Yeah. And the only thing I know about college basketball is, like, you can't look too far in the future, man. It's just like, stuff changes, especially in the off season. Like, changes come fast and furious.
No, there's no doubt about that. Well, per usual, Ben, thank you so much. And we'll see you Saturday, maybe next Saturday. Hopefully. Yeah. We'll catch up with you, my friend.
Yeah. Uncle Bucks, I'm available for any beers you want to toss my way.
Hey,
I'll gladly accept.
I'll be buying you a bunch, and the Marquette Nation better be doing the same. You have a good one, my friend.
All right. Thank you, sir.
We're really lucky here at the Golden Break to have Ben as a regular visitor to the show. I think it brings a really important perspective that all of us, the greatest college basketball fans out there, need. Again, looking forward to next weekend. Man, come on out. Come see us. There's no way we're not going to have a blast. It's going to be a great crowd. And in between the Marquette game, there's a Bucks game at night. So Uncle Bucks is going to be jumping. Come have beers with us. Come and join the pot. Have a fantastic week.